From San Francisco, I'm Moira Gunn, and this is Tech Nation. Today on Tech Nation, I speak with the authors of Attached, the New Science of Adult Attachment, and how it can help you find and keep love. Dr. Amir Levine and Rachel Heller's new book tells us that no matter what we might say about what we want in our lives, our genes yearn to have close relationships.
That's right. And, you know, if you go back to prehistoric times, being attached to somebody could really mean the difference between life and death, you know, being surviving or having a predator eat you for dinner. So really, we've been programmed to get attached to people on a very, very close level.
You would want someone there to be next to you and tell you, you know, tiger on the right, something on the left. And if you walked off by yourself, you most often, most probably ended up as prey.
And yet today, in modern society, we're like, oh, I live alone, I get by myself. And even those people who want relationships, close relationships are hard to come by.
Right. And I think what people sometimes don't understand is that when we attach to somebody, we attach not only on a psychological and emotional level, but also on a very physiological level. And, you know, there have been studies that show, for example, that if you have a mild form of high blood pressure and you're near your partner and you're in a good relationship, your blood pressure is actually going to go down. And if you're in a bad relationship, it's going to go up next to this person. So really, we become very closely intertwined and dependent on this person, whether we like it or not. It's just a fact of life.
So let's talk about this attachment system. Is it all in our brains?
I think it's mostly in our brains, but it translates to all of our body. Like the autonomic nervous system is also controlled by our attachment system. It's a very ancient system in our brain, as we said, that was handed down to us through evolution to make sure that we choose someone out from the crowd and we make them special to us. But at the same time, the programming wasn't so to, oh, I can take it or leave it. It was more, I need this person to be very close to me. And it's like a radar, basically. And if they're not very close and if you don't know where they are exactly, the radar will go off. There's going to be an alarm, and you're going to want to know where they are. And it exists in every each of one of us, even up today, right now.
And so when you see a couple and in public life, for instance, and one deals the other a severe blow, which we see frequently in the tabloids, people say, I can't believe he or she didn't, you know, kick them to the curb. Why didn't you just kick them to the curb? In fact, they tend to go on.
Right. I think one of the things that is very interesting about this whole system is that you get very closely interconnected with this person. And when you want to break up with him or her, then that the entire unit that connects you sort of physiologically and emotionally breaks up. And studies have shown that the pain that you feel is real. So
it's physical pain.
Exactly. It's physical pain. Yeah.
The same areas that light up in the brain when we break our leg, for example, also light up when we break up with someone. And actually, there are some studies that show that if you take Tylenol, it helps. So the pain is real. But society doesn't treat it as such. I mean, society would have a lot more sympathy towards someone who's complaining about a pain from surgery. But then they do have sympathy and empathy for someone who's breaking up. But it's almost like, okay, get over it now. Time to move on.
Tylenol helps. I could have used that a lot. A lot of people are out there looking for Tylenol right now, I have to tell you. Now, let's be clear. All attachment systems aren't the same. There are three types of attachment styles that you point out. Let's go there.
People divide into three attachment styles, and that's really the way in which they view romantic relationships and behave in romantic relationships. So there are three styles, and the first one is the avoidant attachment style. And people who are avoidant, if you've ever been in a relationship with somebody who does want to be in the relationship, and yet at the same time sends mixed signals and keeps you at arm's length, and isn't so happy to commit. So you've probably been with somebody with an avoidant attachment style. And then there's the anxious attachment style. And people who are anxious really want to be close and intimate. At the same time, they worry a lot that their partner isn't going to love them back as much as they love them. And they get preoccupied with their relationship. And then the third attachment style is the secure attachment style. And people who are secure are really warm and loving, and they want to be in a relationship, and they're great at communicating their needs and their feelings to their partner. And they really have the easiest time in relationships. So those are the three attachment styles, and by understanding them, you can really navigate your way in the relationship world.
Do we know what percentage of styles break down in the human race?
That's actually part of the really good news, and one of the reasons we wanted to write Attached is that the majority of the population are secure. About 54% are secure, which is really good news because they're like, we like to call them the supermates of evolution. They have a talent of how to be in a relationship. And then about 25% are avoidant and the rest are anxious. So that's basically the divide.
Now, who finds who? Who's naturally attracted to who?
You know, what's interesting is that a lot of times people with an anxious attachment style are very attracted to people with an avoidant attachment style. And this combination is a really tough...
And vice versa.
And vice versa, right. And this is a really tough combination because, in fact, they have conflicting needs when it comes to relationships, because the anxious person is really wants to be very close and intimate, and the avoidant person doesn't feel comfortable with that, and they try to keep the other person at a distance. And then there's this vicious cycle where the anxious person is trying to get close, and the avoidant person is getting, you know, trying to become more independent, and he gets really upset that this person is being needy, and then there's a sort of this vicious cycle that happens.
There's a really good example that we like to give. Like, imagine that your spouse is going to the airport. So if you were, because going away oftentimes really activates the attachment system. So if you're anxious, you want to hear from them very quickly. And if you don't hear from them, pretty soon you're going to start calling them and texting them. And so let's say your spouse is avoidant. He would probably, it's like, ugh, I can't deal with this. This person is too needy. I just don't have time for this. And probably he'd ignore and won't answer the phone. But if you were with someone secure, they're just so good at relationships. Probably what they would do, knowing that you're like that, they'd be calling you in the cab on the way to the airport. They'd be sort of texting you just before the plane takes off and texting you right when it lands. So if you're anxious, you're not even going to worry. It's going to become a non-issue. So you can look at this particular scenario and you can multiply it by 1,000. And this is like the difference between a relationship of someone anxious with someone secure, or if you're like in that anxious avoidant, constantly going at each other kind of relationship.
In fact, you write that frequently avoidants feel independent and powerful only to the extent that their partner feels needy and incapable. So they might even intentionally, whether consciously or unconsciously, they may intentionally keep you a little off balance.
Right. So I think these two types really feed off one another. So the more the avoidant devalues the anxious person, the more the less confident he or she feels. And so in a lot of ways, they do feed off one another. But
feeding off is different than taking intentional action.
Right. I think a lot of it is unconscious. But I think you made a really good point, because the avoidant stance is actually, studies have shown that it's defensive. They're not really that independent. They're only independent to the point where they can compare themselves to someone else and sort of show them how dependent they are. It's a very defensive stance. And in fact, when you do studies in which you break down the defense, they emerge as very sensitive, just like anxious.
Ah, you got to get them to commit, huh?
Exactly.
Yeah, every woman in America is going, yeah, we know how this works. But let's get to the good news about you. Apparently you only need one secure person in a relationship to really make the thing fly.
Yeah, you know, studies show that being in a relationship with somebody secure can really make you secure. So, for example, one study looked at women who became pregnant, anxious women who became pregnant and went through their pregnancy and gave birth. And they found that when they were in a relationship with somebody with a secure attachment style, and somebody who, you know, reassured them and supported them throughout their pregnancy, at the end of the pregnancy, they had actually become more secure. And there are a lot of studies that show that you can become more secure by being with someone secure.
We always like to think about it as if you're in a relationship with someone secure, it's like having a built-in relationship coach in the relationship. They're just so good in communicating and conveying what their needs are, and what your needs are, that you really learn from them how to become more secure. It's really quite it's quite an advantage.
How do you tell what your own basic style is, and how do you tell what style anyone has that you're relating to?
Basically, attachment styles are a function of two aspects. One is how comfortable you are with intimacy, and the other one is how preoccupied you get with a relationship. So if you don't get preoccupied and you're comfortable with intimacy, you're secure. If you don't get preoccupied and you're uncomfortable with intimacy, you're avoidant. And if you want a lot of intimacy and you get preoccupied, then you have an anxious attachment style. But what we do in Attach is we really break this down, and we have a quiz that people can take. We also have a quiz online at www.attachedthebook.com where you can take your own attachment style and figure it out. And what's great is you can also figure out somebody else's attachment style very quickly. You know, just after a few meetings, you can figure it out, based on very specific behaviors and things that they say and do.
Well, I would imagine that if you were secure and you ran into someone avoidant and they started, you know, doing things to, you know, he or she is going to get in a plane and say, "Hey, I'll call you when I get back." It's like,
right.
if you were anxious, is that what they do? If you're anxious, your energy is going to hit the ceiling going, "What do you mean you're going to call me when you get back?" But if you were secure, you might say, "Oh, this is no way to live. You know, who needs this?" So
exactly. Yeah, we actually, one of the women that we interviewed for the book, it was quite, I think we have the example in the book. She told us how when she used to go out on dates, she never used to play any games. And she really felt that there's a treasure, that she's someone that's worth dating and worth getting to know. So she wouldn't play games, and she would become intimate very quickly with the people that she dated. And then she said a few of them, maybe two of them, she was talking about maybe there were 11, two of them never actually called her back the next day. And she just moved on. She didn't even think about it twice. Just like instinctively, she knew these people are not for me.
And one of the things that's typical, like as you said, is of people who are secure is that they really don't play games in relationships. They're very straightforward. They know what they want. They know what their needs are. And they just don't play games.
Well, I love that, because usually people say I don't play games are the ones playing the games, but I don't know. They're playing the I don't play
exactly.
games game. You know, so, you know, I'm not really good at this. I'm an engineer. I don't have to confess. You know, I'm reading your book. I'm trying to get the science here. I'm trying to get the science down as to what's going on. Well, a whole lot of people are already in relationships, and they're saying, "What if I find out some bad news?" You know, what happens in relationships when you realize our styles aren't really compatible?
I think the good news is that this attach is really applies for people in all stages of relationships, because it's really an overarching theory of human affiliation and romantic affiliation. So it can help you if you're dating, but it can also make a tremendous difference if you are already in a relationship. And especially if you're in an anxious, avoidant relationship, or if there are any issues in their relationship, it gives you a new perspective of how to look at their relationship. And we devote a whole segment in Attach to teach people how to take an attached relationship inventory. So they learn how to become more secure. They learn how to look at their actions and what are the insecure principles that really doesn't help them in their relationship, and how they can become more secure.
One point that I thought was fascinating was that when a person with an anxious style is in relationship with a person with an avoidant style, and in this case, the avoidant style hasn't broken down, they continue to be avoidant, that every time the anxious person finally sort of gets up their nerve and says, look, we've got to talk about this. I need more from this relationship, that they lose ground. They get even less than they got before. It was sort of an amazing thing to me that they weren't able to negotiate up in that sense.
That's really a very, very important point in the book, that when you're in an anxious avoidant relationship, it's really hard to get out of that. We call it the anxious avoidant trap, because both of you are very sensitive to disruptions in a relationship, but in opposite ways. One wants to get closer and the other one wants to get away. And both anxious and avoidant are not very good communicators. So what happens with anxious people is that they often tend to act out. So instead of like calmly saying, you know, this is not good for me, this is not working for me, they would make a grand gesture, they would leave. But then they get really...
Then their attachment systems kick in and they go, oh no,
exactly.
I've left.
And they get overwhelmed. What happens? They get all these activating strategies, we call it. They only remember the good things that happened in their relationship. They can't even remember what was the thing that bothered them. All they want is to get back and to be close to their partner, no matter if he's avoidant or not. They can only remember the good things about their relationship. So, and then when they basically, quote unquote, crawl back and just want to be in a relationship no matter what. And then the avoidant comes in and has like a new, and then he or she want to be more distant now because you've made this gesture of wanting to become closer, which sent them further away. And so you get into that tag of like, it's really a bad combination, and you need to find a way to get out of that vicious cycle.
And what people don't understand, anxious people don't understand, is that when they, make this gesture and threaten to leave, for example, when that's over, they recall all the great memories of this person. That's all they can think of. But what's happening to the avoidant person is the exact opposite. They right. start to just think about all the
I never liked him or her anyway.
They
just walked off.
And this just proves it even more.
They become hostile.
Ooh, this is not
so what
good.
We say in the book is say no matter what, don't threaten to leave. Even though you feel 100% sure that you want to leave, if you have an anxious attachment style, sleep on it a few days. And if you really then decide that you want to leave, then actually go and read a chapter about what it takes to be able to leave someone from an attachment perspective. And then it can really help you, because there's also this, we call it in attached, we call it going back to the scene of the crime. It's like people, again, they get swept with only positive feelings, and their whole body and their brain wants, like, the main purpose is to get them back with the person they were with at all cost.
Therefore, the negotiation in which you lose.
Right.
Exactly.
That's terrible. But you have a really great point in there. When you finally have decided to leave, in any of these styles, it doesn't matter, you're still very, very attached. For whatever reason, you've decided to leave. How do you go about leaving, given the strong attachment system?
I think one of the things we like to say in the book is that you don't get to decide when to leave. It's your attachment system that gets to decide when you're going to leave. So the trick is to find ways to detach, and that can be very, very difficult. And so in attached, we have a whole list of basically advice that we give people, like if they understand their physiology and what to expect when you leave, to expect being overwhelmed with positive emotions, to expect not even remembering why you wanted to leave in the first place, to expect doing things doing things despite your best judgment, like calling even though you don't want to call, or going to meet with someone even though you don't want to go and meet with them. So all of these things are things that you need to learn to expect, and also to be forgiving in a way, because if you're not forgiving, it's actually going to activate your attachment system even more. And then the other aspect is how to calm down the system from a physiological level. And that, like, you know, like when they show women who have like a broken heart eating chocolate, it actually, there is a biological basis for that, because
I'm just loving this chocolate and Tylenol in the same interview. This is so good. Okay, so keep going. So there's a physiological basis for that?
There definitely is, because the example that we use in the book is a study that was done by Myron Hofer, but it was done actually on rats and their pups. And when they took away the mother, And the pups have elevated blood pressure, they have increased heart rate, they lose some of their body heat. And what they did actually was they replaced, each time they replaced only one thing that the mother actually gives them. So they heated them up, or they gave them food, or they gave them something to warm to lie by. And they found out that each individual intervention affected one thing. So when they fed them, their blood pressure went down. When they gave them to be with other pups, their heart rate would go down. So basically what we suggest is try to really have like this overall approach of trying to help yourself when you're leaving someone. So eat well, or eat things that will make, that comfort you. Be in touch with other people that you're very close to, other attachment figures that can make you feel safe and secure. And each individual thing will help one aspect of the yearning for the person that you've broken up with.
Sometimes the person being left wasn't their decision. The other person's been working on detaching for quite some time, and when the final blow comes, they can't believe it. And then years go by, and they never seem to get over it. I know a number of people like that. What's stopping them from moving forward?
You know, there are different aspects to that. One thing that happens is something that happens to people with an avoidant attachment style, and this could be whether they left the other person or whether the other person left them. Is that avoidant people tend to find ways to not to get too close to their partner, or not to find somebody, or to find reasons why they can't commit to somebody new. And what one of the strategies that they do, that we call deactivating strategies, because they're turning off their attachment system, is they get fixated on a what we call a mythological ex. So even if the relationship didn't work out and it wasn't right for them, once that closeness is gone and they're no longer threatened by that very close interaction, then they actually constantly think about this person and use it as a way not to get close to somebody new.
Any new relationship can't possibly compare.
Exactly. They just have this memory of the mythological ex as something no one can really live up to, the mythological ex.
Well, that motivation is good for avoidance. But what about the anxious person who no one knew just seems to compare to the person that they broke up with?
I think what happens is that for anxious people, and that's why in attach, we actually, it comes with a big warning for people who have an anxious attachment style. And again, because I said before, we don't get to decide when to detach. It's our attachment system that decides. We have some control over it, but not that much. And some people really mourn over the loss of someone else for a very, very long time if they're anxious, and it can take years. And usually, the thing that would actually help people who are anxious is to find someone new. Once they find someone new, then the memory and the pain can really dissolve and go away. And that's probably the best advice that we can give someone like that, is just like to really go out there and look for someone that they can love.
Do the rebound. It'll be good for you, if not for the other
exactly.
person, huh?
But they actually may find, especially if it's been many, many years, it doesn't even have to be a rebound. They may find someone else that can, and it can be long lasting.
We all spend so much energy on our children to make sure they feel secure and they feel loved and all of these abilities to interact with everyone. Does that help in the future? Will they grow up and have a secure style?
You know, the jury's really still out on that one. There have been some studies that do show some connection between your childhood attachment and your adult attachment. But even if there is a link, the link is weak. So even, you know, even if there is some connection, it's weak. And what really comes into play, and that's actually a really important point, is that people's attachment styles do change over time. So on average, 1 in 4 people change their attachment style in a 4-year period. And the way that happens usually is when you get into a relationship with somebody new who really changes the way you view and expect relationships. So you do change your attachment styles, and it's not just from your childhood.
So you could be very secure and happen to start a relationship with someone, and before you knew it, you become anxious.
Or avoidant. But that happens, I think that happens less. I think most of the time, if you're secure and you get into a relationship like that, a lot of secures just tend to remain secure. But it can happen, of course.
Now, you mentioned something early on in the book called protest behavior. Let's talk about that.
Protest behavior is any behavior that will increase the availability of your partner. And you can see it happening in kids and also in pets. It's when you feel that your partner is not available to you and you don't really know how to use words to actually get their attention, you tend to act out. Kids cry, or pets sometimes try to get your attention in different ways. And we as adults also have our ways of getting someone's attention. And it could be either by ignoring them or yelling at them. There's so many different ways in which we can try to get someone's attention if we feel that they're not available to us.
We might call them incessantly or text them or again.
Suddenly not respond.
Exactly.
After always responding. You know.
Exactly.
Right. So you notice that your partner has taken 8 hours to get back to you. So now the next time he calls, you're going to wait 8 hours as well. So sort of
what a crowd. I guess that keeps you guys in business, huh?
So you're really keeping score in a way, yeah.
Yeah, there's a multitude of protest behaviors. The main thing is that it's not like a very effective way of getting your message across or your needs across. It uses less language and effective communication and really resorting to, well, protest behavior.
Right, and it can be misinterpreted because you're not making your needs clear. So it can be misinterpreted and you might not get what you really want.
That's a very important point.
Let's describe the elements. And when you have two secure people in a relationship, what is it like? What does it feel like? And how do they behave?
One thing that is typical of people who have a secure attachment, and they'll do that whether they're in a relationship with another secure person or with somebody who is insecure. So one of the things that they do is they understand innately that taking care of their partner's need right away is the best way to go about it. So for example, if you have a partner who really wants to talk to you throughout the working day, and this is not something you really want to do, but they really need to connect with you on a daily basis. So instead of hitting the ignore button all day and trying to avoid them because you feel that they're being too needy, you actually find a way to connect with them in a very small way. And they understand that by meeting your need immediately, you're actually helping not only your partner, but also yourself become more independent and more able to do other things.
So you need to negotiate between yourselves, you know, to say, okay, I can't be called at the office every 15 minutes, but I can give you a text response like every few hours, which I feel is awful, but if you need it, I can do it. And you just like, as opposed to just rejecting it out of hand.
Exactly. And oftentimes what happens is that they're so talented in relationships that they would do it before we even feel the need. So like in that example that I gave about the partner going to the airport, they will text you or call you before you even get all anxious and antsy. They just have this talent of knowing how to respond to your needs before they're still very, very small, before they become a forest fire.
Well, I have three categories of people here, and I'd like to hear your words of wisdom straight from science. And the first is, what words of wisdom do you have for people who are already in a relationship?
If you are already in a relationship, then really understanding attachment and looking at your relationship from an attachment perspective can really open up a whole new world for people. Because once you understand your attachment styles, it's not just you understand a certain set of beliefs and expectations that come with it. And the good news is that you can change those beliefs, you can change those expectations. Like the example that we just gave about the person on the other side who's getting texted and called all the time at work, if they understand that their partner well-being is their well-being and it's not just a metaphor, it's a physiological fact, they'll understand also that they have to take care of their needs and that it's not about being too needy, but it's a dyadic process and they'll know how to react. So really understanding the relationship from the point of view of attachment, like what does dependency mean from an attachment perspective, What does it mean to really be close together? There's another aspect about that we haven't mentioned, that physical closeness is hugely rewarding. It causes the release of endorphins. So to find time to be really physically close, even when you're just sitting and watching TV, to sit closer to one another. There's a range of different things that people can do that can improve their relationships in a tremendous way if they look at it from an attachment perspective.
And Amir, if I could just ask you to continue talking and just describe the dependence. Is it dependency paradox, it's called?
Yes. So oftentimes, you know, like dependency has gotten a really bad rep in our society. And I think because a lot of people believe in codependency outside of the context of addiction and alcoholism. But the truth of the matter is dependency is just a biological fact. When we become attached to someone, we become dependent on them. So the idea is that the more dependent we are, the more effective our dependency is, that is actually the true road to independence. And actually, we can see it. It's a good example is to see what happens in a child and a parent when they go into a room full of toys. If they feel that the parent is there and it's secure, they'll start exploring all the toys. But if the parent steps out, they'll stop playing. If you'll give them a toy, they'll throw it in your face. It's the same thing in adults. When we feel that we are secure with our partners, we can explore the world in our work, in our hobbies. But if we feel that that base is not really there, we're not going to be able to be independent. So paradoxically, the more dependent we are in a more effective way, the more we can soar and achieve.
Now, to those in the early stages of a relationship, just, you know, things are going well because you're still in the relationship, and you're trying to decide if they should commit for the long term. What are the words of wisdom there?
I'd say it's a really good question because that period of a relationship, people think about the honeymoon period and how great it is. You're just getting to know one another. But in many ways, it's actually a stressful time because you're still negotiating and you're still trying to determine what's going to happen. And again, here again, people don't realize that even though we live in modern times and we each, like a lot of people, they have their own apartments and their own phones and their own independence, from the point of view of the emotional brain, we are really just a fraction away from just being in the forest and having all this danger around us. So oftentimes before we actually become very close, there's a lot of stress in the relationship because we are not really completely together yet. And so it's a very tumultuous time. So I think if people really understand that, they can really navigate their relationship better because they can know that even at that stage, they need to really help each other feel comfortable and feel at home and relaxed because that's the only way they can really determine if they're right for each other.
And another thing that might start happening at this stage is that the initial excitement is over. So you had the initial excitement, and it went on for, let's say, 8 months, or it could be as much as 2 years. But then the initial excitement is over, and you start wondering, is this right, or should I be feeling more excited and more passionate in this relationship? And I think it's very important to set that record straight, that at the beginning, when you have all the anticipation, it creates a lot of excitement. But a true relationship is supposed to make you feel calm and secure. And you're not going to be wanting to feel that you're on the edge of your seat 20 years down the road. So I think excitement is overrated in that sense.
People ask, well, we're 20 years down the road and we really... We don't have that excitement that we had in the beginning. And I think there's really a misconception about what to expect from a relationship. And that's exactly what Rachel said. Like, it's okay to be sitting at the edge of your seat waiting for someone to call, thinking, oh, where is this relationship going? But it's a lot less exciting if you're sitting at the edge of your seat 20 years later waiting for your spouse to come home.
Now, for your final words of wisdom, there are those out there who are seeking a relationship. There's no one on the horizon. They're thinking about getting on online and, you know, putting themselves out again. What words of wisdom do you have for them?
The best advice I'd have for them would be to understand themselves from an attachment perspective, to figure out what their attachment style is, and to learn how to figure out other people's attachment styles very quickly, and to figure out who they are compatible with. So, for example, people who are anxious should figure out very quickly if someone's avoidant and walk the other way and vice versa. because these two styles are not going to make each other happy. So if you're already in that relationship, you can make it work. But if you haven't even gotten into it yet and you haven't committed to this person, you'll be much better off finding somebody secure.
Right. And I think another very important point, and that's also something we get all the time, we found when we interviewed a lot of people, is that people really mistakenly equate anxiety with love. So when someone is not calling them back and they're all like antsy to know what's going to happen, they mistakenly interpret that as interest and attraction. And so what happens when someone secure comes along and they're just very much there, and they call when they say they're going to call, and they find that is boring. And so they don't feel that excitement, and they mistakenly think that this person is not for them. So one of the advice that we really like to give people is to give secure people a chance, because there's really a great treasure that can be uncovered there.
I must say that a colleague asked me when I told them I was coming over here, and she discovered that I was going to be talking to you about Attached. She goes, "What point do you say, I love you? When does it come over you? What does this thing people call love? There's no definition. There's no stamp on your arm that, you know, turns from red to blue. You know, what is this thing that people suddenly say, I love you, or they feel I love you, or they say, well, I feel a lot of things, but why would I say I love you? I mean, the person, you know, said it just like that, rat-a-tat-tat. What is that in there so crucial in an intimate relationship?
It's a great question, because it's kind of like that whole idea of making a certain commitment. And I think it also goes to speak about how, on the one hand, it's a very primitive system that rules our brain, the attachment system, but it is also very much connected to who we are as people and our beliefs and our expectations. And so we do have control over some of these behaviors, and we want to hear that someone is actually committing to us, that there is an affirmation of feelings that are already there. And I think a lot of the time when people say that, they already know how they're feeling, and oftentimes they also know how the other person is feeling. But just like that, saying that word, I think it gives people a huge rush of endorphins.
People of different attachment styles are going to say I love you at very different stages. So people who are secure, the minute they feel it, they're going to just tell you. They're not going to wait. They're not going to be thinking, should I wait for them to reciprocate? Is this the right time? They're not going to think anything. They're just going to tell you. And then people with an avoidant attachment style are going to have a very hard time telling you that. They're actually going to have a very hard time even feeling it and telling themselves that this is what they're feeling. And somebody anxious is really going to be waiting to see if the other person feels the same way. They're not going to want to say it before the other person says it. They're going to want to make sure that it's reciprocal. So that's also part of it.
That's a very good point. Because like oftentimes, even when we interviewed people for Attached, there were some people who said, I love you, and then decided to take it back. It becomes a whole thing of negotiation for avoidance. And it becomes a big, fearful thing for people who are anxious. They're just really waiting for that affirmation.
Well, I predict you will have jobs for the rest of your lives. That's my prediction. Amir and Rachel, thank you so much for joining me. Please come back. See us again.
Thank you.
My guests today are Amir Levine and Rachel Heller. The book is Attached, The New Science of Adult Attachment and How It Can Help You Find and Keep Love. It's published by Tarcher Penguin. More information about this interview is available on the web at TechNation.com. For TechNation, I'm Moira Gunn.
You've been listening to the IT Conversations podcast edition of TechNation with Dr. Moira Gunn. Most editions of TechNation are recorded at the studios of KQED in San Francisco. TechNation is also available on over 200 public radio stations throughout the United States, as well as on Armed Forces Radio. Please check your local listings for time and availability.